The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamai and Dr. Z, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Of the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, here on Martin Luther King Day, and we're happy to bring you this very interesting radio where we talk about how to use your mind, natural medicines, and many other techniques to heal your body and spirit. Welcome again to the program, and we have a great, great guest, probably one of my best friends and associates, Elias Ameni Harris. We call him Ameni Harris. And Ameni is president of Integrative Wellness, and he is a nationally registered yoga teacher and has been practicing yoga for over 30 years. He also is a master instructor who's taught students to become certified yoga instructors, and he's studying for his PhD, doctorate in Ayurveda now, and of course has great interest in medical Qigong, which helps individual clients transcend stressful lifestyles and build stronger immune systems and facilitate peace of mind. He specializes in disease prevention, emotional transformation, guided meditation, various Qigong and pranayamic practices, and we're going to have him, and we're going to talk a lot about peace, being that it's the anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King, and I think that's one of the things that he advocated mostly is changing the world by changing yourself and changing your consciousness through nonviolence. So welcome to the program, Ameni.
Yeah, good afternoon, Easy. How are you doing?
Good. Nice to have you here. Okay. And I just want to say that Ameni and I have a regular program every other Saturday, and for those listening you in the Long Island, Connecticut area, you can tune us in on WPKN 89.5 FM or on the internet, WP, like Peter, KN, like Nancy, .org, for our regular radio program, which is called Integrative Wellness.
So, I think you should say on Sundays. That's what you said.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's on Sundays. That's important. So tell us a little bit about your journey as a healer, Ameni, before we actually start talking about mindfulness and peace and stress in our society and a lot of the things that seem to be unraveling people's health.
Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity, Dr. Z, to be on with you on this special day, Dr. King's Day. I also want to give thanks to one of my first teachers, my grandmother, who back in the Caribbean in Antigua I spent a lot of time with, who was a natural healer. She didn't have much formal education, but was very schooled in the ways of using herbs and nutrients to help people stay well. I think that was the first lessons I got, just picking herbs with her and her telling me what herbs would heal what illness and so forth for individuals. I got a first-hand experience with her doing this type of work. Her home was like a sort of informal clinic, so to speak.
Yeah, just to interrupt, I wanted to just announce that, you know, we're myself and Dr. Kamai are running our annual trip to Jamaica for any listeners out there that are interested, where we take people to actually study with people like your grandmother, mm-hmm. People that are herbalists and have a background in shamanic healing from the Maroon tradition in Jamaica. So you can get more information on the website, Dr. Kamai's website, naturalnurse.com. But sorry for that. So you had a steeping in that. And I know in the Caribbean, you were one of the unusual fellows that actually picked up a yoga book, of all things, and started to practice yoga.
Yeah, you know, as a youth, you know, I'd say in my early teens, I was a bit felt a little bit awkward and unassured of myself because I was bigger than my colleagues. The other children were smaller in size. I was just a big kid, and so it I felt a little awkward, and so I became more a little bit introverted and spent a lot of time in the library reading a number of books. I was drawn to Eastern books and books on Buddhism and other Eastern philosophy and so forth, even from, you know, the age of 13 and 14. But around that same time, I discovered a book on yoga, and it just seemed to me that it was a natural thing for me to do. And after reading the book, it said that if you practice the yoga asanas and the breathing practice and the yogic lifestyle, it would make you become stronger and better, perform better and so forth. So I decided to test it, and so I began practicing my yoga practices on a daily basis, and found that it moved me away from being such a nerdish, introverted kid to be more outwardly focused in terms of being involved with a debate club, becoming the captain of my swim team in high school, and playing soccer and other things like that, which I wasn't really doing much of that before. So it just made a big difference in how I was performing and how I functioned in the world. After leaving high school, I came to the United States to study. In fact, I was, you know, set to go into medical school, and I was attending the University of Central Florida in Orlando, and studying chemistry as an undergraduate studies. But circumstances in life happened. You know, my father got ill with diabetes, and I had some younger siblings that I had to help my mom, you know, support and help with the family. And so I ended up just studying chemistry and worked as a research chemist for a number of years. But all the while, I was still practicing yoga. And while practicing, I came across, in maybe the 1980s, I came across a yoga teacher who was, back then they didn't even have yoga mats. You know, if you can understand how long ago that was. He was in a natural food store in a lunchtime hour doing yoga on a strip rug, oriental rug. And he handed out his cards and some flyers trying to encourage people to take classes with him. And I decided, well, I've been practicing for so many years by myself, maybe I should take some classes with him. So I started taking classes with him, and after a while he said, you know, you're quite accomplished at this practice, why don't you go and become a teacher yourself? So I asked him, well, how do you become a teacher? And he said, well, you go to this monastery, it's an ashram in Virginia, the Satchidananda Ashram. And I said, well, how long a commitment? He said, well, you'd have to go for a month. I said, wow, a month? I don't have that much of a vacation, and I had just gotten married, and so it was a hard decision. But long story short, I ended up studying at this ashram. But I'm just making this story to say that there are no accidents. The book I found at 13 in the Caribbean in a library was the same teacher I ended up studying with at this ashram in Virginia. So there are no coincidences, is what I'm saying, about in life.
Right. Now you have a busy practice in New York where you work with a lot of patients, and you tend to, I like your style of treatment in that you tend to come from that yogic style of understanding what's going on in the patient's mind, body, emotional level, but more on the higher levels, because you find that that's extremely important. And I guess with everyone suffering from a tremendous amount of distress, maybe you can go into what that is for people. You know, there's kind of good stress and bad stress, but it all registers in the body either as a negative or positive influence. Why do you think stress is such a killer in our society? What's your feelings on that?
My observation with the patients I see in the office, we have a wellness center in Manhattan, and I see patients there on a regular basis, and I'd say 9 of the 10 people I see have some type of chronic degenerative illness. Could be scoliosis or an ulcer or migraine headaches, or they have even more chronic things like diabetes or heart problems, hypertension. And I find that the roots of what they're experiencing have their roots in some stressful episodes or chronic stress that's going on in their life. that they're not addressing. And sometimes when I'm interviewing the patient, I'm asking, well, what happened 5 years ago when you started having this issue? And she said, well, I went through a major divorce, or I had lost my job, my career went down the tubes, or I had some major illness or some major change in life. But they didn't make a connection between what they were experiencing at the time to the illness that they now have manifested, full-blown illness in their body. And so when I asked them, well, what kind of emotions were they experiencing? Were you angry? Were you anxious? Were you fearful? They said, well, what does that have to do with me having diabetes? So what the point I'm making is that obviously people don't realize, and it's not part of the Western model in terms of medicine, that how we're thinking and how we're feeling, it directly affects how our energy, the chi, the life force in us, how that is functioning, which then leads to, you know, the genetic patterns in the body where what we inherited from our parents or grandparents, how they begin to manifest in terms of illness or disease. Those things show up only because we then have first thoughts like, you know, emotions like anger or fear or worry and grief and guilt and so forth, which then disturbs the mental patterns. And often what I find is that people who are stressed, the mental patterns are towards the negative, so that they then use negative activities or habits like, well, I'm stressed, so I'm going to smoke. I'm stressed, so I'm going to eat a pint of Haagen-Dazs ice cream on a daily basis, or whatever the behavior is, which creates even more problems, health problems down the road. So I'm saying that because of the lack of awareness of how stress is related to the physical illness, if they just take the medicine or the herbs, even natural medicines, you know, take the herbs, take the health, whole food diet and so forth, but I don't change how I'm thinking and feeling, the person will never really fully heal. This is what I've come to realize. So I start from the inside out and say, well, for instance, I start asking people, why do you came? What are your special gifts? What is your destiny? What should you be working on? Because if you're not doing your special work, you know, spiritually cultivated work, it will block the flow of your life force. It will create negative emotions. It will cause you to think improperly and make wrong choices and decisions. It will make the flow of the chi or the prana go haywire, and then it will lead to illness in the physical body. This is how I look at it. This is a model I use for the individuals I see. And then I ask the question, which part of the person is being out of balance? Is it only the chi is out of balance? Is it how they're thinking and feeling? Is it because they have spiritual imbalances that now are leading to them ultimately being sick physically?
So I know you're studying for your doctorate in Ayurveda now. Mm-hmm. They have a unique, you know, Ayurveda ties in with the yogic philosophy. They're kind of branches of each other, I know, in the formal training, in the ancient discipline. But tell us a little bit about the Ayurvedic outlook of stress and people's constitutions, and that how you treat people that have the disease, not just the disease that the patient has. I think that's a very subtle but huge point in your approach and many people's approaches in alternative thinking.
Well, the idea is that if we are not in Ayurveda is the science of life, and I want to give credit to some of the many teachers I've been studying with, like Dr. Ladd of the Ayurvedic Institute and Dr. David Fraley of the Vedic Institute, and my yogic teacher, Swami Satchidananda, who was the first one who introduced the whole idea of, you know, foods for your type and so forth, your body type, your constitution. Well, Ayurveda is the science of life, and it means that, you know, everything in nature, everything in life has an impact on your overall health. It also has the foundation of Ayurveda, which is the sister science or the related science to yoga, has as a basis the idea of tridosha, meaning people can be classified based on their body type. And there are three basic body types, and then can be broken on up to maybe even seven different body types. But the three basic body types that people are aware of, mainly the words, is becoming more and more familiar with Vata, the thin, wiry person who has a lot of kinetic energy. They're fast moving. They're enthusiastic. They have they're the spark of the home or the business. They're the creative, enthusiastic energy. When they're in balance, they are like vivacious and you know, creative. When they're out of balance, they tend to be fearful, anxious, worried, and they tend to want to multitask more, and they actually it disturbs the nervous system and leads to imbalances in the digestive system, windy conditions, and they also tend to lose weight fast. People who are having vata imbalances or vata body type. So this is a slender built person who tends to be anxious, nervous easily if they are out of balance. Then there's a medium built type, that's like the athletic type, the person who is lean and trim. They tend to be muscular. They also tend to be very intellectual, like to be in charge. They are very sharp mind, sharp speech, very good communicators, very good organizers, like things just be so. In balance, they are very, they are very creative and energetic, and they are the leaders. However, when they're out of balance, the pitta types tend to get tense. They may lead to frustration, and that frustration could lead to anger building up as an emotion. That emotional pattern leads to things like gastritis, acid reflux, blood and liver disease issues, skin issues, and so forth. So that's another category of people. And then you have a heavy set type, the person who just looks at the food and walk into the room, smells the food and put weight on. Mm. You know the type. They hardly eat, but they are also heavy set. They're the easygoing, relaxed type. They're carefoot body type. Their structure is big boned, heavy set. They put on weight easily. They have a sluggish digestion. They don't like to move too much. They like to, be couch potatoes, so to speak, sitting back and relaxing. They're easygoing, loving. They are very nurturing and mothering and caring. They tend to learn slower, but once they learn something, they hold on to it for a long time. So there are these classifications I'm saying, and Ayurveda has simplified and summarized dietary patterns, exercise patterns, work style patterns, psychological, mental patterns. So you can arrange people based on their body type or their constitution, what herbs they should take, what diet they should have, how they should live, and so forth, even what type of colors they should have around them, and so forth and so on. So and even what herbs and spices that should be, emphasized for their health. So if you're classified properly, then you get the right herbs, the right diet, right lifestyle, then the person should stay in perfect health, is how, in a nutshell, what Ayurveda advocates. The classification of that, how to put the person in the right place, you may do the person might be asked to fill out an intake information about what they see in their own body as to what are the tendencies for them to be more like a Vata type or Pitta type or Kapha type. Incidentally, there are mixtures. Your person can be a mixture of Vata, Pitta. They could be a mixture of Pitta, Kapha, and so forth. So then there are other multiple types, and there's also something called a tridoshic type, which has an equal balance between all three types. But the philosophical foundation of Ayurveda just summarizes the three body types, Kapha, Pitta, and Vata. What I'm saying is that if you put the person in the right category and give them the right lifestyle, the right herbs, the right diet, the right yoga practice and so forth, then the person should be in stay well, is what Ayurveda is saying.
So when people get sick, you're saying basically, this could potentially be that they're unknowingly violating these ancient laws that the seers, the rishis who gained this wonderful knowledge and laid it down, that there are blueprints for living, and that we in Western society are never really privy to a lot of this blueprint information.
Yeah, Ayurveda, like I told you, is the sister science. Yoga came to the West in the 1960s with people like Swami Satchidananda and others. But the teachings of Ayurveda didn't come at the same time. So most people who practice yoga today are not so versed about Ayurveda, and in America it's not so much of a popular thing. Maybe in the next 15, 20 years it'll be as big as Chinese medicine, Ayurveda, because it's a similar type of medicine that says people are energetically, mentally, physically can be classified, and once you classify them, if the person is out of living a life out of balance, you bring them back into balance by giving them the type of foods and lifestyle patterns that would bring them back into their dosha, make their dosha or their constitution be back in a balanced way, then their health would be returned back to normalcy. So that whole idea is gradually becoming more and more part of the American culture, because people are, you know, we have a sickness care system that's not really dealing with people's health. So people are being put on, you know, there are five people who have diabetes, they may all get five the same medicine. And so one or two may get well from it, but the others may get severe side effects from it. So that's not really a scientific way. A scientific way would say, well, let me classify the person, so you're treating the person, not the illness, and give the person the right medicine that's in line with their constitution, and so that the probability of reducing side effects and or even problems with a person's health is eliminated.
So let's get back to the whole idea of how to transcend stress, because this is pervasive in our society. People are, you know, they have cell phones, they have, their lives are being put on Facebook. They have to respond immediately to being texted and things like that. And I don't think we're wired to do that. I think if the ancient people saw, I wonder if any of the seers had any, inkling that society would go like, that this would become a vatagenic, as you put that, actually the word, a vatagenic time. I wonder if the ancient psychics and mystics predicted that this would happen to the planet at this time. But, you know, talk about how you see what's going on today, and give us a prescription for healing from your perspective.
Yeah, this whole idea that we're living in a speeded up time where we have everything instant, and not enough time to commune with nature, and not enough time to spend with an introspective kind of life, meaning spending time meditating, spending time contemplating, even to read a book, you know. We are being drawn outside and kept so busy that we have no time to reflect on what's the main purpose for our living, why were we sent here on Earth. So, you know, we are here to have a spiritual growth and development, to find a way back to the source. Call it God, call it Mother Nature, whatever you want to call it. I'm saying that we are sent here with a particular destiny. And by not living the destiny, we can create an inordinate amount of stress. For instance, I see people who, because they want to be successful and want to make a lot of money, may go into a career path that their parents encourage, or the society said, well, go be a good lawyer, go be a good accountant, or whatever the field is, and so you can make a lot of money. But in that person's heart of hearts, they would have been a good painter, or a good sculptor, a good artist, a good musician, or whatever. And they then gave up that innate gift or talent that they were supposed to bring out to people, to maybe be a healing balm to people with music that would make people have a life that is full of joy and peace, because the music that they're playing is just meant to soothe mankind. But instead of bringing those gifts, that person is now doing their accounting or their lawyering, and they're making a lot of money, but they're unhappy with what they're doing. That unhappiness translates into them feeling tense and anxious, or maybe they're expressing too much anger or too much fear. And it then disturbs how they're thinking. So when they're thinking wrong thoughts, they may then decide to smoke two packs of cigarettes per day to calm that anxiety down. Or they may overeat you see? Mm-hmm. And then that ultimately begins to block up the energy channels. The qi is not flowing well. One of the main first things that go to balance is the liver channels. You know, person have, you know, our motive response to things that are we think against us is to get tense and frustrated and then lead to us expressing or holding in anger. And that stops the flow of blood and qi or the life force. And then ultimately the organs that need that blood and qi begins to develop dis-ease, so to speak. Well, the solution is to, for me, and I'm encouraging people to slow down, to take time to commune with nature, to go walking in nature, to sit by the ocean, watch the sunset, to actually try and feel time again, to take up mind-body practices like yoga and meditation, qigong, tai chi. These are type of practices that will help people to be more in tune with their body and their mind. You know, we're in January, Dr. Z, and people make resolutions about losing weight. And you see all the ads on the TV encouraging people to join this club or to go on this fitness program. But most people may go to the gym and they are exercising on the treadmill or the whatever, the elliptical machine, and they may be watching the TV monitor at the same time. So I call it an out-of-body experience, meaning the person is experiencing the physical activity in the body, and their minds are connected to the soap opera or whatever they're looking at, and so they're not connected. The mind and how they what they're experiencing in their body is not connected. When I teach yoga class, I'm always encouraging the students to, you know, when you're in the pose, the asana that you're doing, that your mind is aware of where you're feeling the effect of the posture. Not only that, that the person is breathing slowly and deeply and mindfully, so that there's the energy from the prana and the qi that's been taken in with the breath is being sent to that air, because as quiet as it's kept, where your thoughts go, so does the life force go or the prana go. So you can actually begin to heal yourself by being mindful of where you're feeling the effect of the posture, see? So the difference between that type of exercise and the exercise where the person is watching the TV monitor or reading a magazine is that they're not able to send their qi to where they need to be healed. So that the exercise now becomes something that's been done to circulate blood and to build muscles, but it's not really dealing with healing process that needs to occur.
What about
on the physical level, because there are higher levels in terms of one can then use the yoga practice or the qigong practice to go into meditation, go into a trance state, where then one can then change old patterns of behavior. But I always answer the question saying at the level of just the physical body, that you can breathe and be aware of where you're feeling the effect of the posture and begin to heal where you're having some illness.
So with pain, for instance, like a lot of people feel aches and pains and whatnot, it's colder out and maybe people are have some arthritis setting in or some other types of things, you can actually affix your mind to the area of the pain and influence that pain in a positive way. You're saying instead of taking things to keep blunting the pain, which maybe has some role, but you're saying basically being mindfulness. Maybe go into that a bit more for people.
Yeah, well, you started with arthritis, and both of us, we wrote together a book on arthritis, and in that book, I wrote a segment on yoga and its benefits for arthritis. Now, what I'm saying is that the areas where you have pain, usually the joints are the areas that get stored, inflammation is stored, their park is there, you know, and the synovial fluid then tends to get dried up over time, and then inflammation, which in Ayurveda is called ama, the phlegm, the toxins are going to accumulate. It then degenerates and move away the real the healing substance that's in the joints, the synovial fluid, and so that person then has maybe, if you're pitta type, you may have inflammation, red, swelling, inflamed kind of arthritis. If you're kapha type, you tend to have watery, swollen, dampness, so the weather would be more affecting the person based on the cold, wet kind of weather conditions. Mm-hmm. And it's more swollen, like edema around the joints and swelling and pain. And then there's a windy type of arthritis, which is more like osteoarthritis, where there's dryness, crackling, popping sounds, you know, and painful movements because the nerves now are being damaged because the joints are being eroded. Well, what I'm saying is that the Ayurvedic, the yoga practice, not only are you breathing deeply, so you're bringing more oxygen into the blood, into the tissues, into the joints, into wherever to the body, but the actual holding of these asanas with the twisting movements or the, you know, stretching movements or the bending movements are acting like the agitator in your washing machine. If you, let's take the analogy of washing your clothes. If you go and put your clothes in the washing machine and you put some nice sweet-smelling detergent in the dirty clothes and take the agitator out and turn the machine on, the clothes will be swooshed around but not be squeezed and pushed and push the dirt out so that your clothes will be clean. So after a cycle of wash without the agitator, you will have the wet, soapy, sweet-smelling clothes, but it still be dirty. So I'm saying the asanas actually are postures to squeeze toxins out. On another level, there's something called mama therapy, another branch of Ayurveda, which I'm very much involved with at this present time in the work that I do. But what I'll say is that the asanas and that people are doing, the yoga postures people are doing, they are stimulating these mama points. Mama points are like acupuncture points, and they are where the junctures, mind and emotional body, where the thoughts and emotions meet the physical body. These are particular points on the body. There are 117 points on the body, and they get stimulated by these asanas. I actually believe that the rishis who first discovered the mama points and then used the asanas to stimulate those mama points so they can stay well. Mm. So you can keep the organs, internal organs, the heart, the lungs, the liver, the spleen, whatever organs, to function more normally by doing the asanas. So on one level, just physically breathing and holding the posture, you can alleviate the pain. By doing the asanas, by squeezing and moving the body, you're squeezing out toxins. And the third level, I'm saying that there's these energy vortexes, these junctures where your mind and your emotions meet your physical body that gets stimulated when you hold the asanas. These are called mama points.
Mm. Let's take a quick break, and we'll continue our discussion. I want to talk about other things like longevity and aging process and certainly gaining more peace of mind in light of it being Dr. King's birthday. And so stay tuned right here to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. There's much more to come. Bye-bye. See you later. Stay tuned.
To PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Tune in to Titi's Grace Notes, where we'll be bringing you inspired voices from around the world, creative voices from various fields and backgrounds, new sounds, new music, and new ideas with your host, Titi. Every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on Progressive Radio Network.
Ever wonder why some people have successful lives? Well, let's shrink about this. Hi, I'm Dr. Molly Barrow, author of Matchlines with Singles and the Malia and Teacup Self-Esteem Building Series for Children. Please join me and my guests every Tuesday morning from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to explore psychological and practical problem solving, from personal issues to world events. You can call in to join the conversation or just enjoy listening. If you're looking for balance in your relationship, career choices, family, and your planet, please join Dr. Molly Barrow and Shrink About This Tuesday at 10 Eastern on www.progressiveradionetwork.com.
This is Martel with Sierra Club Radio. Tune in Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com to hear interviews with green authors, activists, politicians, celebrities, and more.
Hi, progressives. This is Betsy Rosenberg on the Green Front. I hope you've been enjoying the news I'm bringing you hot off the press, so to speak, like behind-the-scenes stories and insider scoop from Al Gore's recent climate conference. I know the Greenistas and love introducing the most informative and inspiring experts on the Green Front every week. So join me as we learn more about our environment and what we can do to turn it around.
The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, every Wednesday at 2 on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, this is Virginia Reed, and I'll see you this Friday talking about Long Day's Journey Into Night. We'll have both the director and the main actors, both male and female. This is Virginia Reed. I'm very happy I'm back, and I can't wait to see you all this Friday again on PRN.
This is PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
And I hear the music, and that means we're back with more of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamperone. And, of course, you can always get in touch with us at our website, www.drznaturally.com or naturalnurse.com for Dr. Kamai. And we have on phone Master Ameni Harris, and he is president of Integral Wellness, LLC. And we've been talking about yoga. He's training in Ayurveda. You also have some background in a special type of Qigong, Ameni. Welcome back. Tell us a little bit about Qigong and how Qigong can help people attain a more peaceful existence.
Yeah. You know, it seems so interesting that the East and the West are now coming together to kind of bring their minds together. The West has a lot of practicality and business orientation. If you go in the East, you find people have simple lives, but they are less stressful about getting to the material so much. So maybe the balance between the East and the West is coming into being. But in 1994, while studying at this monastery, I came across a monk who introduced me to some Qigong healing sounds. And the healing sounds, he told me, were developed maybe over 3,000 years ago. And basically, he gave me a small booklet to read about the history of Qigong. And in it, it talked about this Buddhist monk who was traveling in China trying to spread Buddhism. I think his name was Dhammapada at the time. And he came across these Taoist monks in their mountain hermitage just sitting around meditating. And he noticed that after sitting for a long time, their bodies began to atrophy. And so Dhammapada developed two types of movements, which is the foundation for Qigong, mirroring what was going on in nature, how the water flows, how the wind pattern moves, the leaves, how the animals stretch, and so forth. And so there were two types he developed. One was called Dong Gong, which is the movement, and slow meditative type movement with breath. And then the Yin Gong was a more meditative, internally focused type practice where the body is not moving, but the mind is visualizing and moving powerfully the life force and chi to help heal. Well, my first orientation to it was around healing sounds. Now, it sounds very peculiar that you'd be able to make some special sounds and affect the organ systems in the body. In Chinese medicine, the Chinese have a very interesting way of looking at the medical, interesting medical model. They summarize in five organ systems, meaning There's a kidney energy organ system, the liver energy organ system, the heart, the spleen energy organ system, and the lungs. Now, when I say energy organ system, I'm meaning that it's not just like the anatomical heart, lung, liver, spleen, kidney, as we would look at in the Western anatomy, but it is it's under the idea of, say, kidneys are subsumed the ideas of the ears, the bones, the hormones, and so forth, you see. If you look at the liver, for instance, under that you can subsume the ideas of the eyes, the blood, the movement of chi, the tendons, the ligaments, and so forth. So in what the Chinese did was to classify under the same, that the same one organ system, all the similar organs that did the similar type of work or had the same energetic patterns, so that you could simplify things down to the lung, the kidneys, and if the person needed to be treated for the kidney illnesses, he'd be given a particular herbal formula and it would heal his bones or his hormones or the brain function and so forth and so on. So it's a kind of elegant way of dealing with a number of things that have similar patterns.
Right.
And the same thing with Qigong, there are healing sounds for each of the organ systems that will help to deal with transcending emotions, because they discovered over 3,000 years ago that these healing sounds, when you say them, can remove these emotions that I've talked about earlier that can affect how we're thinking and how we function, how the life force is in the body, and how we are functioning physically in terms of physical disease. So the healing sound, there's a healing sound for the kidneys, for the liver, for the heart, the spleen, and the lungs. And if one would practice these healing sounds on a regular basis, then those organ systems could be kept in a balanced state. The Chinese also have an idea that there's something that, you know, the opposites of yin and yang. Yin is the feminine, the nurturing, the cooling energy, whereas yang is the hot, male, extroverted type of energy. And so the idea is to balance both yin and yang. And these sounds are meant to help to bring back the balance if, for instance, the emotion that affects the kidneys is fear. And so if you're too fearful, then the healing sound would normalize that fear, so then the person could function in a healthy way, where they're not, for instance, if a person is too introverted, too shy, that's not because the person has a problem, but it's a person that maybe the kidneys are weaker, you know, there's a deficiency in the kidney, and so the healing sound would have to drive away that particular fear. So actually what I do with patients, after I talk with them and counsel them about their how I look at health in terms of mind, body, spirit, I might then do some applied kinesiology with, in terms of which organ system may be out of balance emotionally, and then prescribe healing sounds, Qigong. Typically, I'd say 24 healing sounds for each organ system. So if the person had kidney weaknesses in the kidney, they are a fearful person, and they're also anxious, and they tend to have grief, patterns of grief, then the prescription would be do these kidney healing sounds and the heart healing sound and the lung healing sound maybe 2 times a day, 24 times each.
Mm.
And what would happen, the beautiful thing that would happen here is that if you kept saying these sounds, the anxiety, the fear, and the grief would begin to dissipate, and without having to go to years of lengthy counseling and other, you know, maybe even taking strong pharmaceutical right. drugs that have negative side effects, the person could then use that to heal themselves.
So
along
share with us, like a couple of the sounds. Like I think because we're talking about peace and mindfulness, peace of mind today, Dr. King's birthday. And I guess that would
if
be
I had to
worry.
Choose one,
yeah, go ahead.
One, if I have to choose one sound that would, mm-hmm. that help people to be less agitated, it is the sound, the liver healing sound. You know, it actually, if you say the sound, I found that it puts you into a meditative state if you just keep saying it. So the sound is the sound shoe, like the shoe on your foot, shoe, and you take a deep breath into the belly as though you're pregnant for women, or if you have a, for a man, you might imagine that you have a bare belly. When you breathe in, the belly would expand fully. And then you would breathe out, making the sound shoo. And if you are feeling tense, frustrated, and even angry about whatever life situation, it would help you to relax. It would also bring you into the present moment, and the tension would dissipate. And ultimately, it might even make you go into a meditative state, a relaxed kind of, you know, tranquil state. Some people, I find, they say the shoe sound and fall asleep because they're tired. They didn't know that they were tired, you know. And the beauty about this, the disturbance in the liver energy, it also is connected to the adrenal gland, you know, the idea that a person is responding to XYZ stress, and the stress, now the adrenal cortex is releasing lots of cortisol, which then makes the body, stiffens up the muscles and makes, shunt blood away from the brain and other vital organs to the muscles in the legs and arms, so you can run away from your foe or fight your foe. Well, I'm just saying that sound, the shoe sound, would help to dissipate and lower down, reduce the tendency to release so much cortisol. It would also just help to relax the muscles and remove the stiffness from the tendons and the ligaments, which when you're tense all the time, it leads to stiffness in the body, which is a sign of aging. You know that a premature aging, when a person can't touch their toe, or when the person can't, you know, just bend or move like they used to, that's a sign of an aging person. It doesn't matter how old you are. Age is not so much a chronological thing, but a biological degeneration. And so a person may be 40, but functioning as though they're 60. And this, one of the signs of that is having this excess stiffness in the body. So the healing sound, the shoe sound that I would recommend people say, would be very, very helpful to take the tension out of the body and create a more meditative, contemplated mindset.
Now, there's certain, that's wonderful. I mean, that's something anyone out there could do is, mm-hmm, learn these sacred sounds, and of course they could come see you. By the way, where are you in New York, and what's your website?
Yeah, I'm on Second Avenue.
Okay.
And it's 305 Second Avenue between 17 and 80 Street, and the wellness center is called Life Prescriptions or Life RX, and we're on the lower level, Suite 2. And the website is LifeRx dash.
Like RX, like a prescription,
yeah.
RX.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Great.
Life.us.rx.
Okay. We'll give that out towards the end there.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. But go ahead.
So tell us a little bit about, I wanted to hear more about aging. I think promoting longevity is, mm-hmm, we only have about 10 minutes left in the program.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we age faster the higher, more stress we're under. I know they did studies on many, even up to primates, that the more stress they're under, there's a physical change in the tissues where they have like less mitochondria and more toxins in the tissues, more free radicals are generated. So there's a lot of Western look at aging, but from the Eastern thing, we hear of, you know, these sages that have lived way, way beyond the time. You know, they took herbs and they did special practices. So what can you tell us as far as tonic mind-body things for aging?
Well, I'll say this. In the West, there have been studies showing that one of the main factors that contribute to aging is, you know, consuming too much food, or not eating, you know, eating the right types of food, and not eating too much of the wrong type of foods.
Mm.
But now, some recent studies, I went to a medical conference last year in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and also in Santa Fe, and I found there was a study showing, this Harvard professor was showing, that they would look at mapping the brain patterns of people who meditate, and also looking at how they age, and found that people who meditated tend to have less oxidative stress in the body, less free radicals, better health profile in terms of all the major markers for diabetes, cancer, heart disease, hypertension, and so forth. So in a nutshell, what I'm saying is that people who have a more contemplative, meditative lifestyle, meaning that they would sit and maybe breathe and watch their breath and relax the muscles, and then at some point relax the mind, and to the point where the mind now is not thinking thoughts. And in this meditative relaxed state, they're experiencing the peace within, meaning our nature is to be at peace. You know, we are made in the image of the divine, and God is peace. And we experience the peace when we can stop the outwardly focusedness and begin to tune inward and be more tranquil and relaxed. So in my advocation, I'm advocating that people take time to meditate. Meditation is a very powerful healing force. It helps us to get away from the outside and to, not that you're going to drop the world, but to maybe go directly into the source. They say that there's 10%, mankind uses only 10% of the mental and emotional capacity that they have. Well, I ask the question, oh, where's the other 90%? And now we begin to understand here in the West, those ancients knew that the other 90% was in the so-called subconscious mind or the divine mind, and that you can only access it in the meditation state. In this state, you can get actually downloads of information as what to do and how to do something, and even inspiration as to what your solutions to life problems and so forth in the meditation state. So meditation is one of the things I'm strongly advocating for people who want to have a more peaceful lifestyle, a peaceful way of existing in so-called this stressful time, or the economy turned down and so forth. People are stressing out about this, that, or the other. But if you would develop a practice of meditating maybe at least twice a day, early in the morning, maybe in the evening, sitting for half an hour and just watching the breath, maybe just saying a mantra like Om or Om Shanti or some simple mantra like that, could help you to be more of a peaceful, inwardly focused life, which would then help to be your cells to stay healthier, make your digestion work better, make your mental function be sharper, which are all markers of better health, of anti-aging, of slowed aging. If your vitality is stronger, if you are have a better mental capacity, better solutions for your life's issues, then obviously you are living in a younger way. So this is one of the solutions I'm recommending most highly. Just as a note, you mentioned Dr. King's Day. Most people don't realize that Dr. King got his major part of his inspiration from the work of Mahatma Gandhi. In fact, he traveled to India to meet and to just to be inspired by Mahatma Gandhi, and to take on actually two of the principles of the yamas, which are the practices of the eight limbs of the Ashtanga Yoga. Is the first rung of the Ashtanga Yoga is the yamas, meaning things that you should observe. And the two things that he learned from Mahatma Gandhi was nonviolence or ahimsa, and to speak truth to power, meaning even if your life is threatened, you need to speak the truth, because that gives you a lot of power, which is satya. So the two principles, ahimsa and satya, was what he came back and advocated here to bring about change in the culture, change in the mindset and the hearts and minds of people in this culture, to bring about a revolution, in America, without gunshots, a nonviolent revolution, so to speak.
And so what could we, in our last 5 minutes, how could we take what Dr. King advocated and work it into our regular lives, kind of like a lot of the things that you said there? I like your approach in that you're combining some Ayurvedic ideas and Chinese ideas. Like, I meditate and do the shu and other sacred sounds. I find that those are the best mantras for me, and have made me certainly a better person. But How could we take what Dr. King's legacy and heal ourselves? Because it starts with ourselves. We can't heal the planet unless we heal ourselves.
Yeah, well, I start off saying that, you know, people should go find out what their destiny is. You know, we all are here with special gifts. We made a contract with God that when we come back to Earth, when we came to Earth, we would be doing a particular work. And to do and live that work is one of the major things that will heal people, because it takes away the spiritual stress that comes when you're not doing your destiny work. The other thing I'm saying, that to have a meditative, contemplated life where you're slowing down and turning inward and not always focusing outward. In order to be effective outwardly, you have to be inwardly strong. Most people know that they develop their physical muscles by going to the gym and lifting weights and running and so forth, but they don't know that the internal man or woman needs to be strengthened. And how to strengthen that is by having a daily practice where you are sitting for meditation, where you're doing guided visualization and so forth. Incidentally, there are three levels of man. All right, the average person, maybe 7 out of 10 people, will tendency to want to do something when they're stressed, do something negative to escape the stress. You know, maybe I'll smoke some cigarettes or drink some alcohol or whatever people do to escape the stress. And they push, it makes even more stress. I call it pushing yourself into a deeper hell, because then you had some stress from your work or your relationship, and then you started taking up another habit that then created more stress for you, making you ill and so forth. The next level of person who developed their will, which comes from having a more meditative, contemplated life, can then choose not to do negative things, but may use more positive things like doing Qigong or yoga or Tai Chi or some type of mind-body practice to help them transcend the stress that they're dealing with. On the highest level, maybe 1 out of 10 people on the planet, the stress, the thought of the stress doesn't come. And in fact, if the stress comes, they look at the stress as something they should go to and go into to access God's wisdom, God's power, and God's omnipresence. And so they become more divine in their how they're functioning. So I'm saying that the goal of life is a chance to be transformed from this lower level of function where we try to seek outside things which then are negative to help us get rid of the stress, to become more divine. So we have the power to affect change without doing anything about it, to have the wisdom to know what to do without making mistakes, and or to be in the world but not be affected by the world, so to speak, and what's going on in the world.
Give you your email, because we're running out of time a minute.
Okay. If people wanted to be in touch, they could actually, the Wellness Center is called Life Prescriptions. We are located at 305 Second Avenue between 17th and 18th Street on the lower level. You can contact me at 203-685-0450. That's 203-685-0450. Or you can look at the website there. It's life.rx-us.
Okay. And your email is eharris05@snet.net.
Okay.
And you can
certainly
tune in to myself and Ameni when we do our bi-monthly radio show every other Sunday on WPKN.org. You can listen to us and hear just an incredible message, Ameni. And we want to thank you so much for sharing this on this real sacred day, Dr. King's birthday.
Okay. Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, and stay healthy. Bye-bye. And that does it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z signing out, wishing you a peaceful day. Stay healthy.